Wow. It was so beautiful. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I love that song. That's one of my favorite songs. And thank you. We did not communicate this time about music, did we?
No.
You could not have found me anyhow, but.
Well, I communicated with Cheryl.
Okay, good. Good, really good job. You did a really good job. This is going to blow your mind. Hang on. Oh, man, can you play, Richard? That is just, you know. That piano deserves to be played that way. That's right. That's right. Wow. So thank you so much. Awesome. Oh, my God. You're so good together. Oh, I love you together. So good morning. Welcome again to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. And I am about to deliver a message that I've been excited about for several weeks. And you know, we're moving. My life is chaos as chaos could be. And so I was very careful as we were packing up this stuff to put everything I would need for my job, you know, for church, in special places. But apparently they were too special. So I did manage to start the talk in the computer. I have a little template, you know, and I grabbed the quote from which I took the passage from Ernest Holmes, who is the founder of religious science. I'm working out of this book called The Art of Life, and I have a few more weeks in there. And I managed to grab the quote, so I at least know what direction I was going in. So any conversation we may have had, you know, but I love to see how God works, because everything from the reading to the music, when you first stood up and did that, that's what I'm talking about today. You know, really, it'll be really fun for you to hear that. So the inspiration for me was just in that gorgeous word, echo. You know, I just thought when I read this quotation, and Holmes, I'll read the quote a little later, Holmes used it in a gorgeous sentence, but I thought, man, there's a lot of meaning and a lot of potential here for us to look at a spiritual connection to this idea of what an echo is. Because what is an echo? You know, immediately, and all week as I thought about the title, it's like I see the kid in the canyon, you know, going, hello, 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 hello. You know how, you know, it's just that's the first thing that comes to my mind when I think of a visual. In this case, it was more auditory, I think. But an echo is what happens when a sound is out there. The vibration of a sound starts moving through the air. The sound waves move, and they hit a surface, right? The sound waves hit a surface, and then they bounce around. So it comes back. So what I was thinking about was how fascinating that idea is, because if you hear an echo, and let's face it, we don't often get to hear them that quite, like, hello, hello, hello. We don't quite get to hear the whole beautiful rendition, but we hear an echo even in a big empty space, in moving. I noticed that as we removed the furniture from this big room with the high ceiling, there was an echo, and I noticed my 3-year-old granddaughter liked that echo and did interesting, a little unnerving things with her voice from time to time, because it was fun to play with, right? So we can hear the echo. So there's an original noise that it then has a reverberation because it bounces off of something else. So what we hear in the repetition of the echo, or the after sound we hear from the reverberation, is not the original sound, but it's an imitation of that that keeps getting bounced around. So it's unlike a mirage, which will be a whole other good talk one Sunday, because a mirage is something you see, and you can absolutely see it. It's not like we're making something up in our head. It's an effect that's created, and we can see it, but then when you're driving on the road, we get a lot of them on the desert roads, right? And when you're driving along, and then you get there, and it really looks like there's the road's flooded. There's water up there, but you get there, and you see, oh, it's just a mirage. Well, an echo's not like that. Your ear is actually hearing something, right? The mirage is nothing, but the echo is something that can actually be heard. But it's not the real thing. Okay, so there are things, and then there's the real thing. And that's what I want to talk about today. That's where I realized this is a lovely spiritual opportunity for a spiritual conversation. And when we look at this idea of our life, we live our life, well, we are really here, you know. I mean, we could argue that. Randy will be happy to have that discourse with you later. But we are here in skin and bones and blood and tissue, and all of that is physically real. But what do we teach in the spiritual realm? That there's something even more real than this that you can see and touch. And if you think about the way we speak about what God is, well, God is that which we cannot see with our human eye, but we can perceive. So there's that about us, and it is life. It is that very thing that makes us alive, that beats our hearts and breathes our lungs and, you know, and stimulates our body so that we can survive in physical form on the planet. But there is something even more real that we can learn about and that we can use as we study about that to enhance our experience of living. Now, you already heard everything I wanted to say in the music and in the reading, but I'm going to enhance that just a little bit. I always try and say the word embellish at those moments because it's such a pretty word, but sometimes it comes out embezzled accidentally. So I have learned now when that thought balloon happens, I go, dodge that word. Just don't even try and say it. It takes too much thinking. The next thing I want to point out is that our memories, and we've already mentioned this too, our memories are like echoes of an old experience. Right? So something happens in our life, you have an experience, that experience was, it happened. Now our interpretation of it may not be as accurate as, or at least we may not agree. If two people go through the same experience, they may have very different ideas about what just happened. Relationships really teach us that, right? But our memories have an echo. You know, if you look at how the dictionary defines echo, there's the actual echo, which is the thing, the noun, but then we use that word almost like a metaphor in our languaging, in the way that we communicate, and it means, it's used like a verb. So it's a repetition of anything, a repetition of an idea, a repetition of a circumstance. So it's a repetition, but it's also an imitation. It's not the real thing, and that's the message that we're making today. There's the real thing, and then there's the reverberation that happens after that. Well, the memory is a reverberation, and sometimes our memories can get us into a little mischief. Sometimes we love our stories and our memories, so I love my stories. Do you notice? That's why I can be a minister. Because I have good stories. At least I think they're good. That's all that matters, I guess. Our memories can make our physical body think we're still really having that experience. That's what science says now, right? So if you're stressing out about something that's going to happen on Tuesday, it's not even real. It's not even here. It's not happening, but you're thinking about it, and you're having stress, and your body then has an actual experience of stress. Is that not right? That's what we know now. And so what do we teach here? We teach, well, the way to deal with that from a spiritual perspective would be to notice what you're thinking about and then change your thinking. Change your thinking, change your life, right? So if I can get myself out of the stressful worry or the resentment or the anger or the disappointments of the past, and I can be right here in the now, well, then my life is going to be original and not an echo or a reverberation of something that happened a long time ago or something I'm worried about in the future. And as Deepak Chopra says, happy thoughts make happy molecules. So we have healthier bodies. I know I can't say it without this accent. I try so hard. So here's the quotation I found from Holmes. Now Holmes takes it in a slightly different direction. We're going to go really deep right now. Holmes said, "The good things of life for which we seek are but echoes of the true self, that real self, the divine self I was talking about. The good things we seek are but echoes of the true self knocking at the door of consciousness. So all the desires we have to have a greater experience of good in our life are echoes, are reverberations of some inner truth that is lying in wait for us to uncover it and to live and to open ourselves to be able to receive the answers to our prayers and the desires of our hearts. So in many ways, the spiritual path is about sifting through and sorting out the real from the unreal, or at least in the way that we believe it or see things in this moment. It is not necessary for us to agree. What is important is that we begin to look at honoring the integrity of our own being. And what I know about my own integrity is that basically, the integral parts of my beliefs and my truths, they don't change. But boy, my views sure do. Do you find that in your own life? You know, that we just get a little more information, we get a little more wisdom, and we can begin to then have a different perspective on some element of our life. But my oh my, while we're sifting and sorting, some of us just have an interesting or rather entertaining way of sifting things through to find our truth. Now, I say this is a good thing. You know, we really advocate here to not treat life like there's a destiny, an end reward. There are other churches around the area where you can do that. But in here, we like to really emphasize the beauty and the value of the journey. And really, it's getting more and more common. We're hearing that is true. It's very important that we look at the quality of life we bring ourselves by the choices and that we make, not only in our spiritual path, but just in general. And that's a good thing. That really helps us. So my life has been an interesting journey lately. And I was not here last Sunday. And by the way, if you noticed, I didn't have a lot of warning that I wasn't going to be here last Sunday. It came very quickly. What happened was I was called to officiate a wedding in San Diego, and it was the marriage of my youngest daughter. And it was such a treat. Not only was it the most gorgeous, beautiful wedding I have ever attended, not because she's my daughter, but because they wanted a small, intimate wedding on the bluffs, right on the ocean at sunset. And his mother flew in town, and his mother surprised him by flying in his sister. He didn't know that till the day of the wedding. And my children were there. My grandchildren, who love this man, were, it was really cute. They're, hanging from the bride, the three-year-old, hold me, while I'm doing the vows. But it was gorgeous. It was really the most gorgeous wedding I've ever officiated. And what's really beautiful is they have a gorgeous love story that I cannot tell you in detail. But these kids, they're not kids, but almost got married 5 years ago. We all flew to Hawaii for the wedding, and they called it off at the last minute, and they both went their own ways. And you know, everybody involved with these two, this couple, knew that they were destined to be with each other, and we were so heartbroken. You know, they were so good together, and not a word why, they just both went their own way. And I don't know what happened, but thank you, God, I can quit praying on that. But they got reunited. They found each other again. They started texting. They started talking on the phone. They took that courageous act and met in a restaurant. And the minute they saw each other, they knew that love had never altered a tiny bit. And so then things moved very quickly. The difference is that this relationship cannot be an echo of that relationship. See, that has to be whatever that was, that has to be over, and this has to be brand new. And I so knew that in the wedding ceremony, I used the quote from T.S. Eliot that says something like this, I paraphrased, that sometimes we return to that place where we once began, and we know it for the first time. We have so many opportunities to do that. That's why the choice of music is so profound. That we life is a cycle. Life, it is the wheel of life. If you look at the hero's journey, it's drawn out in a circle. That that there is this glorious circle of life, and we are always coming again to the same circumstances. But when we arrive there, if we notice that, if we show up without the echo, without the old reverberations, we can show up fully present in the now, and we can know it for the first time. And that's what we teach in terms of even our daily life. This is the day the Lord has made. Yesterday is gone, tomorrow's not here. This is the day that the Lord has made, and I can be glad in it. I can rejoice in it. I can expect to know something for the first time this very day, no matter what. So, yeah, yeah. So I think that's what the message needs to be when we are looking at echoes. How can we move through our lifetime and follow those cycles, just like the seasons? Look at nature, how beautifully she does it. These are the same two people, and there is an echo of familiarity in that relationship, but there is something brand new that has never been experienced. And honestly, what made the wedding was beautiful, so beautiful to me, was when I looked at my daughter, and she doesn't cry much, and she had these big tears running down her face while they were looking into each other's eyes, saying their vows, and he took his hand and wiped her tear, and he just, oh my God, they just, you know, it's just such a beautiful love story, and they're so blessed to have this second chance. There's always something more waiting for us, always, no matter what experience we're going through. And I think that it is that way that we try and put everything in a familiar order based on what we're comfortable with that gets in our way of noticing that. Now, I was thinking of another example. Hugh and I lived in the 90s, 100 years ago, it feels like, as expatriates in Indonesia. And when you are an expat, by the way, is someone who is living in a country while they are still holding their citizenship in their country of origin. So we had never traveled before. We show up, we've got this apartment, we know we're gonna be there long term, and so the first couple months are just like a great extended vacation. Then you start getting homesick and you start missing, I mean, there's not even a food you can taste that's like familiar, you know? So you start trying to recreate, I just noticed we did this, we start to recreate a life that would be familiar to us. And so we found, through other expats, that about an hour and a half from our apartment, there was a grocery store just for Westerners. So it's not just, keep in mind, the expats, they're not all, here's my naivety, I thought, oh, there'll be a lot of Americans there. Well, expats are from all kinds of countries, you know, not just the U.S. So, but the Westerners had this luxury grocery store. It was quite nice, and it was made to make us feel familiar so we would spend our money there. And really, it was ridiculously fun. We had no problem spending about $15 on a bag of frozen Oscar Mayer weenies for a tiny taste of familiarity. There were no hot dog buns, not even a bread that would taste close, but we had those weenies, doggone it. And not only that, but for $18 American, we could buy bacon, also frozen for God only knows how long, but we were glad to have it, and I would take it home, and I had this one little pan on my one little hot plate, and we would have bacon and probably smelled the whole building and probably grossed people out, but man, we were happy, and it was familiar. So I notice that when you are in a foreign country, everything feels foreign, especially if you are there longer than a week or two. So most of us do vacations, but if you've had the opportunity to live somewhere else, well, it's stunning how it takes time to assimilate. And after a while, we realized we didn't need to make things familiar, that we could acclimate and become a part of a culture that was new to us. And in that way, we now are not reverberating off the old. We're no longer comparing and thinking about what we missed back home, but we have now been enculturated. So there are some good lessons for us in life. And you don't have to be reunited with an old lover or live in a new country to get the point of what the message is about this morning. The message is about putting less value on our former frame of reference when we're standing right in front of something brand new. That's how we miss holy newness, you know? And what did it say about that echo, about that reverberation? It's repeats. It's a repetition, and it's an imitation. It's not the real thing. How can we show up and be present to the realness, the richness, the holiness of life that is right in front of us all the time? When we make a decision or set an intention to stand in our own integrity and to be present to see what's really in front of us and to sort of let go of some of our older beliefs or that frame of reference to seek that new perspective. When we do that, we stand in integrity in every way more fully. We don't need to walk around and be an imitation of anything or anyone else. And I think that for me, that is what I believe church should be for, that we should be able to come together, and that in every church, I would love it if I believed or if I had some influence, that in every church, in every synagogue and temple, there was some element of talking about that. How do we tune in to our authentic self? How do we stand in integrity, even for our religious beliefs, if that's important? See, spirituality, we do not claim to be religious. We are a religion. It is necessary for us to be a religion. So Centers for Spiritual Living was formerly Religious Science. And our name change has broadened our audience because it's taken out both science and religion, and it's a little easier to hear. We had branding people tell us that the title we picked was better than Pepsi Cola, the branding they did for Pepsi Cola. So there's something changing in the way people are looking at Sunday service now. Churches are closing like crazy. People are looking for something new. Not only are the younger generations, the millennial generation, not only are they not predicted to be churchgoers, but there are, as a new generation, as a new type of people that they're calling the duns. People that have gone to church all their life and they're just done. They're done. And why are... I didn't see any humor in that. If you're me, this is not good news. But what they're done with is the old time, the guilt and the fear and the all that stuff. And so I believe that we as an organization are already poised. Some of you have heard me say this in classes and whatnot. We are poised to really be open to that which is spiritual and broader. So spirituality is a quality. It is a quality, whereas religion speaks to a specific form. And there is nothing wrong with form. I swear, if I didn't have a Sunday gig, one of my great joys would be to visit all kinds of different churches and religions. I find that fascinating. I love to see the way people worship. But what we see happen with religion as opposed to spirituality is that religion often excludes anything, anyone or any belief that is perceived as different than what they believe is the true faith. And that's the one gift we give. You know, our founder did not want ever for us to be a closed system. We want to be inclusive. We want to, we want you to be able to believe whatever your spiritual beliefs are. I love it when people come here and they've gone to Mass before they come to the center, or they do temple on whatever night you do. What is that, Friday, Saturday night you do? Yes, see, there you go. I know there are some people here who do temple. That's what I think we should be about. And I love that idea that spirituality is a quality. And we should not in the way we look at even our choice in our spiritual practice, don't just be an imitation of the way somebody else does it, you know? I don't ever want you to think you have to pray like me. You have to pray like you, you know? And it's okay to have a favorite practitioner and you like the way they pray, you resonate with that. That's why we have a lot of voices, so you can find that. But what we're all looking for is that original voice. We're looking to wake up within us, whatever that original voice is, so that we can feel that intimate contact, connection with the divine. Never, you know, we don't need to imitate in any way. We just need to practice being in our own integrity, being genuine and authentic. Emerson, whom our founder, Ernest Holmes, studied Emerson, and when I read, recently I was thumbing through Self-Reliance, Emerson essay called Self-Reliance, I can see how much impact that essay had on the way this movement was created. Really, it's a lovely, lovely read. I never get tired of it. But Emerson said that imitation is suicide, right? And think about what happens to an echo. Hello, 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 hello. And it fades away. It gets really diluted and washed out. It's like making a copy from a copy from a copy. Right? Remember before we had the internet and we shared jokes on the internet, people who worked where there was a copy machine, they would copy those jokes and sometimes they would and then they'd give them to their friends and then their friends would copy them and then by the time you see them, they're all grainy and it's kind of hard to see and they get watered out, right? So we want to be the original. We don't want to be watered down like that. Imitation is suicide, but this, my friends, this is my most favorite Ralph Waldo Emerson quotation. This quote I have been nurtured by since I first read it so many years ago. Self-reliance is the essay, and these are Emerson's words. I must be myself. If you can love me for what I am, we shall be happier. But if you cannot, I will still seek who deserve that you should. But I must be myself. I will not hide my tastes or aversions, but rather I will trust what is deep and holy. I must be myself. It's the only being you can be. I will not hide who I am. I will stand in my shoes and in my beliefs and where I am, and I will be willing to look for fresh and new truth and original truth so that I am not an imitation. But I cannot hide who I am. I will not change who I am. And instead, I will trust what is deep and holy. Luscious words. Beautiful words. Amen. When we stand in our integrity, then we have actions that are in integrity. You know, if we are authentic and true to who we are as ourselves, and we constantly are open to expanding what that might look like. You know, when we do that, then our actions are beautiful. Then we're kind and we're generous because we're aligned to spiritual truth. We're in that pattern for our life that is perfect. It is divine. It is the way that we allow that idea of God that thought us into being, that created us in the image and likeness of. And we can only have that experience of good and more good because there is a perfect pattern. Just seek to do that. So when I say stand in your integrity, I think I'm talking about that way that you can feel when you're out of line, when you're about to do something or say something you're probably going to regret later. And we can learn to honor that. We can trust what is deep and holy. And so when we are in integrity, our actions are integrity, and then we don't react on the reverberations of all the past experiences that we've accumulated in our lives. Then we can return to the place we once began and know it for the first time. And that's what I wanted to say today. Life is all about being real. I think that life gives us, as I have just witnessed this amazing wedding, I mean, who knows what they'll be doing in 6 months, but I'm telling you, love right now, love is real, and it won't matter because they came together to do this work that they have been called together to do. When we are real, these glorious opportunities will not be missed. We will come back to that place and we will see it. We will claim it. We will know it and we will live it. So stay fresh. Be real. Be genuine. Honor your own authenticity. And by all means, trust what is deep and holy. And so let's take a moment to turn within and anchor some of these ideas in that great and mighty truth. Let us just turn to the secret place inside. The quiet place of the Most High. I feel the love of God within me, and I recognize it as that powerful presence of God. For love indeed is the most powerful force in all the universe. I sense that infinite intelligence right here in this room. The wisdom from our collective experiences. And that wake up that we have sensed this morning that calls us to the now moment. I know that God is right here, right now, in this very room, at the center of each person sitting in a chair, that in every living thing, every blade of grass, every bird that flies, I feel and sense and know that that presence of God is that very thing that has called us here this day. And so whatever it is that has opened our hearts, has stirred our curiosity, we just gently seed it in that soil of pure potential right now. We allow ourselves to feel the exquisite opportunity of the expression of goodness to expand in our livingness. And so I am so grateful to know that this is how life works, that there is a creative process, that everything in the universe reflects to us the way this creative process flows, that every thought is a new opportunity, and that we have the power to change a thought in an instant. And as we do, we change our lives. And so I speak my blessing upon every person who is praying for a sense of unlimited good. I know that now, as we recall this truth and find our place and take our stand in the integrity, in the perfect divine pattern, that we come in contact with that inexhaustible supply of good from God, the grace of God flowing out to us right now, extending to each and every one of us. We open ourselves to be vessels to just receive. If God is for giving, then we must be for receiving. And so wherever there is a need or a call for healing and in a physical way, and in any way whatsoever, I know that this prayer sparkens the intelligence in the human body so that it is free to do that work that restores us to our wholeness, to our beauty, to our perfection. And wherever there is any evidence of a relationship that seems limited or shy of the fullness of love we desire, I speak my word of blessing here too, that love flows freely and effortlessly, that we cannot even block the flow of God's love. And so whether it is our own self or another loved one or someone we've read on a prayer list, we just bless this planet. We bless every living thing. We stand for peace. We stand for plenty. And I know that there is an action of the law that is responding to the words of this prayer even now. So I say thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you, Infinite Spirit, for all these truths that are being revealed to us today, for the way that we return home and see it for the first time. I am so grateful for a spiritual philosophy that teaches me how to stand in my truth. And so in that spirit of deep, deep gratitude, trusting what is deep and holy, I simply release the words of this prayer into that divine law that always answers affirmatively. I let it be, and together we say, and so it is. Amen.